with Pavel Perez. I'll give you his full name. And if the talk causes you to have more interest, you can look on the archive. 1002.1754. And we're only at version 2. Okay, so this is going to be a little bit of an informal talk. I'm just going to use the blackboard. I won't overwhelm you with stuff. Basically, we'll spend like half the talk canceling anomalies. So it'll be a little bit low stress, but people usually feel good if after the talk they actually understood what was going on. So that's the goal. So what's the outline of what we're going to do? First, section 1 is about what do we love? And then in brackets, about the standard model. Because if you're going to build another model, the standard model's standard, so that's sort of the standard candle against which you should judge the success of your whatever you build. And then I'm going to talk about gauging V minus L. V and L, sorry, not V minus L, and in particular the anomalies. In other words, the anomaly cancellation. And then I'm going to talk about what the Lagrange density of the model is in the quark sector. And then in the lepton sector. And I'll mention briefly some of the phenomenology along the way, but that's not really what this talk is going to be about. It's just going to be about the setup, how you go ahead and gauge B minus L, B and L. I keep saying B minus L. How does a model, so why am I doing this? Well, of course, if you look at symmetries that we observe, baryon number is observed to be a symmetry. Lepton number, of course, we have the mixing between the neutrinos, but we don't really know if overall lepton number is broken or not. It depends on whether the masses are Majorana or Dirac. And so it's interesting because we observe those symmetries to see whether they might arise from gauging and then spontaneously breaking that gauging, because we know there's not a massless gauge boson associated with those symmetries. So it's something that's worth trying. But of course, if it comes out ugly compared to the standard model, then we should just forget about it. So you'll see how ugly it comes out when we try to do this. I'm not trying to solve the hierarchy problem or anything like that. We're just going to see what it takes to build a model where those U1s are gauged, in addition to the U1 of hypercharge. I'm working in the large N limit, where N is the number of boards. Hope I don't get confused. I don't think any topology enters in, but I'm not sure. Okay, so in the last 10 years, maybe 20 years, trying to think when this started, maybe 30 years, all you've heard about is how awful the standard model is. You know, we got low-energy supersymmetry, we got extra dimensions, we got technicolor, because the standard model is awful. We've been bad-mouthing it. So it's true, we love it, but it's kind of a love-hate relationship. And you go visit Steve Weinberg now, he's kind of got no hair, he's kind of walks a little bit with a cane. It's not because he's gotten a little older, it's because he took 30 years of people abusing his model. So I want to say a few nice words about the standard model. It's really awesome. There are things about the standard model to like. Even to love, if you're a physicist. Okay, so to put that into context, I got to just go over very quickly the representations of the particle content of the standard model. Of course, it's based on the gauge group SU3 for color, SU2, this is the weak, across the U1 of hypercharge, and this part is broken to the U1 of electromagnetism, spontaneously broken by the vacuum expectation value of a doublet of scalars. So So I'm going to label the fields, and I'm just going to put in brackets all the gauge quantum numbers. So the first part of the bracket will be the standard model part, which is the SU3 quantum number, SU2, and U1. And then I'm going to write down the baryon number and the lepton number. I'm going to also write down those quantum numbers, even though in the standard model, of course, they're not gauged. But we got to know what they are, because we're going to gauge them momentarily. So what do we got in the standard model? We got the quark doublets, and there's three of them, the three generations. Don't ask me why. And they come with three colors. It's a doublet under the SU2 weak, so it contains up and down quarks, left-handed. It's got hypercharge of sixth. It's got baryon number a third and lepton number zero. I got to not lose this board throughout the whole talk. Who wants to be in charge of making sure I don't erase this board? Are there any volunteers? No way. I'll offer you a what can I offer you? What do I got? No, this is, I'm from America. It's all about cash. What have I got in my wallet? What's this? I know. Yeah. What's the currency called in Thailand?
Baht.
Thousand Thai baht. Forget it. That's like $30. No. Yeah. Forget that. Okay. No one's going to be in charge. There are no volunteers. That's it. We're going to be risky here. Okay. I'll have to remember. Okay. What next? Upright. Three generations again. Don't ask me why. Color triplet, SU2 singlet, hypercharge two-thirds, baryon number a third, no lepton number. The downrights, three generations, SU3 triplets, no SU2, minus a third for the hypercharge, a third the baryon number, no lepton number. What am I at next? Some leptons. Lepton doublet, three generations again, don't ask me why. It's, of course, no color. A singlet under color. It's a doublet under SU2. It's got hypercharge. I think it's a half in my convention. No, minus a half, apparently. Okay. And then it's got no baryon number, but it's got lepton number one. And then E right. Three generations of right-handed, these are left-handed, of course, contain the left-handed electron and neutrino. No color, singlet, hypercharge minus one. And then for the baryon number and lepton number, the usual. Oh, God. Okay. So what else do I want to add? Well, I'm going to add three right-handed neutrinos. Sometimes you put them in the standard model. Sometimes you don't. If they're very heavy, you can integrate them out. We'll talk a little more about that later. The reason you don't usually put them in is because they're singlets under the whole gauge group, so you can write down a mass term that's not forbidden I guess I should put a zero for here, by the SU3 cross SU2 cross U1 gauge group, and they got zero and a one. And then there's the Higgs doublet, not a fermion now, a scalar doublet. And no baryon number, no lepton number.
But this assignment of lepton number for right-handed neutrinos is somewhat, I could possibly put zero there and say that my current fraction is violated.
Well, I want to have a conserved lepton number since I'm going to gauge it. Okay, so that's the quantum numbers. And what is it that we love about the standard model? What we love about the standard model is that this is all I have to tell you about the standard model. You then go ahead and take the fact that the gauge group is SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. You write down all the possible operators that are allowed. There's an infinite number of operators allowed. So you restrict your attention to renormalizable operators, operators that are not suppressed by powers of mass, or coupling constants that have dimensions of mass to some power or are dimensionless. And then you find for some range of the parameters there, you can fit everything. And it all works. Then you go ahead and look at the non-renormalizable operators if you're interested in them. And then you can put some limit on the mass scale associated with those operators. So let's take a look at some of the non-renormalizable operators. We're interested in ones that do things that the standard model doesn't, like violate baryon number and lepton number. So if we look at baryon number violating operators, you can write down something, for example, with three down quarks and an E right. Use an epsilon tensor to contract the color indices. This is suppressed by 1 over lambda squared. And if lambda is some number like 10 to the 15 or 10 to the 16th GeV, then you get an acceptably small amount of baryon number. The limit is to take the lifetime of the proton, for example, divided by the branching ratio for P goes to positron E plus, that this has got to be greater than about 1.6 times 10 to the 33 years. So that's a nice thing. In a sense, in the standard model, we understand why baryon numbers conserve. It's because you cannot write down any interaction that violates baryon number. The first place you get one is dimension 6. And then for some scale here, which is less than the Planck scale, more like it works for lambda, let's say, less than 10 to the 16th GeV, this is okay. Then you could get some small violation of baryon number if lambda was above this that would be consistent with the experimental data.
For lambda larger than.
Yeah, this is the limit. Yeah, lambda larger. Sorry, I did it backwards. Thanks. Yeah. You might think, well, this is a trivial thing. This is a trivial success. Okay. So if that's what you think, let's think about the leading contender to the standard model. Low-energy supersymmetry. Much of the community believes in low-energy supersymmetry. One of the touted successes is the fact that it, in quotes, solves the hierarchy problem. It gives you a unification of the coupling constants, but it doesn't pass this test. There are renormalizable and dimension 5 operators that violate baryon number. And in the dimension 5 case, the scale has to be greater than the Planck scale to be consistent. In the renormalizable case, it would be some incredibly small dimensionless coupling. So this is something that the standard model does that that low-energy supersymmetry does not do, for example.
Can't you adjust parameters to fix that?
Well, so that's right. So if you'd need some incredibly small, but if you have a renormalizable operator that could give you baryon number violation, you could always have an incredibly small coupling constant in front of that, and then you would get small enough baryon number. But the nice thing about the standard model is that we can understand why baryon number is conserved just by this dimensional analysis. So we really understand something. Well, as in the other case, you just put in this incredibly small number. So it doesn't rule out other situations, but it's nice that we understand it in this case.
Well, you can pose a discrete symmetry scheme.
For the renormalizable one?
Yeah. Well, I'm just suppressing the renormalizable
one. Yeah. So even if you can, this is nicer. You don't have to say any other words. You just do dimensional analysis and you understand why it happens. But there's no, I don't think anyone would argue that this is a, you know, there's no extra things you have to mumble. You just give the gauge content. You understand why this is a small effect. Is that clear? So if you don't put the right-handed neutrinos in, then you can understand also why neutrino masses are small. You could say they arise from some dimension 5 operator of the scale lambda. And when the Higgs gets a VeV, this gives a neutrino mass around G, I have to put a G here, G V squared over lambda. And for lambda, a large number, like 10 to the 12 GeV and G around 1, this gives you neutrino masses of the right size. You can also understand why neutrino masses are small. If you put the right-handed neutrinos in, integrating them out can realize this mechanism in the case, if G is of order 1, in the case where their Majorana mass is very large, of order the scale lambda. So that's some really nice things about the standard model. Hold on, I gotta have better board manners. Oh, geez Louise, this is just some awesome thing. But there's more in the standard model. That's really nice. We have very good limits on what are called flavor-changing neutral currents. So what's an example of that? Something like, let's do a real physical process and ask how it happens in the standard model. Let's do a B quark. I love B quarks. We could do it with kaons too, but I'm fond of B quarks. B goes to S, mu plus mu minus, let's say. I want to calculate that in the standard model. At the standard model, you calculate some diagram like this. It occurs first at one loop. There's no tree-level thing of this form, for example, through a Z0. This is just absent in the standard model. These effects are small because they first come in at one loop. There's another additional suppression associated with this, something called the Jim mechanism. Because the top quark's so heavy, it really doesn't matter in this case. It's more important in kaon physics. Not really a suppression in this context. So, no flavor-changing neutral currents at tree level. No operator you can write down at tree level. No allowed or normalizable interaction that causes flavor-changing neutral currents. That's a huge plus for the minimal standard, for the standard model. We can understand this feature, this gross feature of the data that's observed in kaon physics, in B physics, in charm physics, just from how the particles fit into the standard model without saying anything more. CP violation is automatic? Absolutely. I should have mentioned that one. It's not in my notes. I forgot. That's really bad given that I wrote my PhD thesis on CP violation of the standard model. Yeah, but we also understand, of course, there's one part of that we don't understand. It's actually not a huge success now that I'm thinking about it, because it's got the theta parameter, right? The theta parameter is a dimensionless coupling constant that has to be less than like 10 to the minus 9. Of course, we have the electron Yukawa that has to be less than, that is, I'm sorry, 10 to the minus 5. So we already have small coupling constants. So there, you know, that is there a normalizable interaction that would violate CP, could give you larger electric dipole moments?
Do you harbor any hopes that Kaplan monopires exist?
No. But there's one thing about that. The reason that problem is not mentioned as much compared to the hierarchy problem is that the hierarchy problem is the fact that the Higgs-Vev is so small compared to other possible mass scales. And that's true, but if that was all that was going on, it wouldn't be such a huge problem. What's going on is that it's not stable against radiative corrections. If you set it to be small at tree level at one loop, it comes back. So you have to tune it order by order in perturbation theory. The QCD, theta QCD, if you make it small, it's true it gets renormalized, but it's many, many loops. And with any reasonable cutoff, it's also the coupling constant of a dimension 4 operator. So it stays small. If it's 10 to the minus 9 at tree level, it's not going to be induced to be a problem. So that's why that's always on the back burner. If you have a problem like that, you could hope to imagine, to understand it in a more complete theory at a higher scale. That would probably go under the minuses of the standard model, actually. But anyway, there's a lot of nice things about the standard model, and these sort of features that you want to understand most of the physics just by dimensional analysis. You want to suppress flavor chain neutral currents at tree level. Those are things that are really important if you want to say that your model you're building is, in quotes, as good as the standard model. Okay, so let's go on to discuss anomaly cancellation. So, of course, the standard model anomalies cancel. We want to gauge B and L. Those anomalies don't cancel, so we should cancel those. We should calculate those anomalies just from the standard model fields, and then that tells us what we have to add to. Well, then we can check whether the fields I tell you I'm going to add actually cancel the anomalies. Does everybody understand where I'm going? Okay, so this is kind of relaxing. All you got to do is multiply charges together. It's not even matrices. So we'll succeed. So we'll go through them one at a time, and if I get bored at some point, I'll just tell you the results of the rest of them, if that's okay. But after I do a few of them, you'll see how it goes. So here's a standard model. So this is first we're going to do the baryon ones, and then we'll do the lepton ones. So there's an SU3 squared U1 baryon number. We could calculate that. So how does that go? Well, there's a factor of a half coming from trace TATB, where these are the SU3 generators. Then what contributes? Well, colored chalk. I love colored chalk. This is so good. So the Q lefts contribute. So how do they contribute? There's two of them. So I get a two. There's two fields in here for the up and down, so that gives a two. There's three generations. I goes over 1, 2, 3, so that gives a three. And they have baryon number a third, so I get a third here. And now we have to add, for example, the U rights. Uh-oh, I lost the color. Dang. Maybe this is more trouble than it's worth.
There's more color over here.
No. U right. Well, three generations, a third. It has no SU2. It's not a doublet, so that's all here. And important feature is that this is left-handed and this is right-handed. Left-handed and right-handed contribute oppositely to anomalies. So you got to pick some convention. I picked the left to come with the plus. So this is minus. And then the down. It's now minus because they're right-handed. And again, three and a third, and you can see it's two, minus one, minus one. So there's no anomaly here, just from the standard model fields. Let's do one where we have an anomaly. SU2 squared U1 baryon number. What do I get in this case? Well, again, there's a half, according to the way I do it, and also from the trace TATB. There's three colors. They can come in three colors. Oh, where's it coming from? What's the only thing that can contribute to this? It has to be a doublet under SU2 and have baryon numbers, so it's just the Q left. Is that clear? So nothing's going to cancel it, obviously, so we're going to get an anomaly here. It's the only particle that can contribute. So there's three from color, three from generations, and it's got baryon number a third. And so this is equal to 3/2. So there's an anomaly. If I just have the standard model fields, I clearly cannot gauge baryon number. Well, let me do one or two more.
So I thought there was this top anomaly matching condition, which tells you that you can do it with the infrared fields and the standard model fields. You can calculate, and you should get the same answer if you do it with the ultraviolet fields. So that's telling you you can't add stuff to.
No, you can't. Why that works, the physics of it, is that if you add a field that can get a bare mass term, then you have to have a left and a right that compare up so they don't contribute to the anomaly. But if you're adding fields, they're going to get VEVs, for example, from the Higgs getting a vacuum expectation value.
So you're going to link it in the
reasons. Let's see, which other ones do I have to do that are non-zero? Okay, here's one also that's non-zero. Yeah. I guess I should put it equals. We'll just do this, the non-zero ones, otherwise you'll rebel. Okay, U1 hypercharge squared cross U1 baryon number. What's that? Well, we have to look at the various things that can contribute. Now more or less everything with baryon number contributes. There's Q left. So what do we got there? It's got the up and down. It's a doublet, so there's a 2. The hypercharge. Uh-oh. What did I do here? I did this one. The hypercharge is a 6. There's 3 generations, 3 colors, baryon number a 1/3, so that becomes a 9th, and then minus a 1/3, so this is the D right. So the minus is for the right, this is the hypercharge, 3 times a 9th, minus 2/3 is the hypercharge for U right, 3 times. Uh-oh, this one is 0. Basically, it's 0 because it's a 1/3. This one's just 0. Did the wrong one. Sorry. Yeah, it was actually, got a little confused in my notes. Let's go back to the one I started with. Okay, I'll get it right this time. Here we go. This one will work. So first we'll do it in the same order as before. Q left, it's a doublet. Now the 1/6 is 136. 3 generations, 3 colors, baryon number a 1/3. Minus, now this is a 9th. 3 colors, 3 generations, baryon number a 1/3. And then minus, this is squared, 4/9. 3 times 3 times a 1/3, and this ends up being -3/2. Let's see if there's any other ones. And that's it. So these are the ones that we have to take care of. Oh, I'm not going to do any more that are 0. The rest are all 0. So an ordinary standard model generation doesn't give you anything. It's those two anomalies, if we try to gauge baryon number, that we have to add stuff to cancel. Of course, if I add stuff, I got to make sure it doesn't induce the other anomalies or a standard model anomaly in the standard model gauge group. But you'll see how we take care of that. And similarly, let me just give you the non-zero ones for the lepton number, if I can find it in my notes. Okay, so there's the anomaly for SU2 squared U1, and I'll just write down the answer now. That's 3/2, and the anomaly for U1 y squared U1 left is equal to -3/2, if I did it right. And all the others are 0. Okay. So what are we going to add to cancel the anomalies? Well, I want to cancel the standard model anomalies in addition to these. And we know the standard model couple anomalies cancel for an ordinary generation of quarks and leptons. So basically, I'm going to add a generation of quarks and leptons, but I'm going to assign them strange baryon and lepton numbers to cancel the baryon and lepton number anomaly. But that way I'm assured that all the standard model anomalies will cancel.
So they won't cancel in each generation? Or do they?
The standard model anomalies, in other words, just SU3, SU2, U1 cancel generation by generation. But the lepton number and baryon number anomalies cancel between the ordinary generations and this new one.
I see. So you can't, is it, would you say that it's not possible to just add one?
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe it's not.
I don't think it would be as nice as this. I couldn't find anything that was totally nice, but there's other nice things that happen when you do this. So we didn't really do an exhaustive search to see what cases cancel anomalies. Oh, I'm sure there's more than one. But, you know,
Did you actually solve for two cases?
No. We basically said we can cancel the Satter ball anomalies by adding a generation. Let's see if we can satisfy these other constraints. So it wasn't a systematic search. There are papers on anomaly cancellations, sort of the general structure of anomaly cancellation for gauging. Gauging baryon and lepton number. So I forget, it's a long time ago, this paper. So I could never understand the notation used in this paper. I forget the name of the author. I think it's referenced in our paper. Pavel claims to have understood the notation and says it's not what we did. But, this is not a huge thing, being able to cancel the anomaly. So let me just show you what works. The question is, after you do it and try to build a model, how nice does the model look compared to this other case? But, of course, canceling anomalies is part of the business of building a model. So I'm going to give you, there's two simple ways to do it. First, and one of them makes a nicer model than the other. It makes a nicer model because it has a natural dark matter candidate. That's sort of a minus to the standard model, too. None of the particles in the standard model can be the dark matter. We know there's dark matter, so it's not nature. Okay, so I'm going to add this generation. And what are the quantum numbers that I'm adding? Oh, where is it? Where? So I really should put it on here. So I have all the stuff and all the quantum numbers on one board. So I'm going to erase this part of the board and put it there. And that way we can save this, even though you've left me completely responsible for not writing there.
Since you included the right-handed neutrino into the SAM model, you could make super weak interacting dark matter out of right-handed neutrinos. It would have to be a one with very, very small mixing.
Yeah. See, could I really do that with just the interactions? How would it annihilate to...
No, it's not thermally excited. You take something take two that are giving you right neutrino to the noise, and the third one, which is completely weird, mixed with the angles like 10 minus 10.
Okay.
Then you can just say that it was initially non
not thermally.
And then,
okay.
And then you just...
just fit to it.
Thermal leakage into this.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so what am I going to add? It's going to be a standard. It's going to be a fourth generation. But I'm going to flip the chirality. You have a choice. Oh, shoot. If I took the standard model and I flipped everything that's right and called it left, of course all the anomalies would still cancel. It would be an overall sign everywhere. All the zeros would go to minus zero and they'd still cancel. So when I add this fourth generation, I can do it either way. But the way that is nicest for us is to make what was left-handed before right-handed. And I'm putting a prime to denote it's the fourth generation. It could be buried in left-right symmetric models, but I'm not sure because of the unusual baryon number assignments I'm about to make and lepton number. It's possible. You'll see in a moment. You see, if I want to be able to cancel something like this, I don't want to add three generations. I just want to add one fourth generation, and that has to do with satisfying precision electroweak physics constraints. And so I'm not going to get, and this is linear, U1 baryon number. So, with one generation, I'm not going to be able to get the anomalies to cancel here unless I assign the baryon number to be 3 times greater than the standard model baryon number. So the fourth generation is going to carry a bigger baryon number so that I only have to add one of it to cancel anomalies by a factor of 3.
Heavy nucleus.
Yeah, you could think of it like that. They're real baryons, not a third of a baryon. But they got color. So that's the idea. You flip the chirality for reasons I'll make clear later. Doublet, minus a half, and now it's 0, 3 times the lepton number. And this is the singlet under color, singlet here, -1, 0, 3, and this is singlet, no hypercharge, no baryon number, 3.
But it's just the S parameter if you add
3 generations? It's essentially the S parameter. I'm going to talk about that right now. So just wait a second about precision electro weak. And so you can see right away it's going to work for this anomaly, and you can verify that it works for all the other anomalies. Just a simple generation, tripling the lepton number and the baryon number. Pretty simple idea for how you cancel anomalies. So just with adding this, we can now extend the standard model to colored chalk. This is an optimal place for colored chalk. The problem with color chalk is that you can never erase it, but that's for the next speaker's problem, not mine. So this is the model now. This is the content. We've enlarged the content. Now let me tell you, we could have done this, it would have exactly still worked if this was left, this was right, this was right, this was left. This was left and this was right. It would still cancel the anomalies. Okay. So, why did I want to do it with just one generation? It has to do with precision electroweak physics, so let me tell you a little bit about that. And this part's actually a little bit of a minus when you talk about comparison with the data. Oh. So now I should start at the bottom here and work across.
Are you going to introduce any non-trivial scalars?
Absolutely. I'm sorry. Thank you. I've not talked about the additional scalars. I'll need additional scalars to break lepton number, to break baryon number. Both of those will be done with a scalar that only has quantum numbers under the gauge groups. And I'm going to add one more complex scalar to allow the fourth generation to decay. And that particle will also be the dark matter in the model. Yeah, I'm going to add scalars, too. Thank you. Good point. So here we go. Where should I say? Should have it here. Plus new scalars, and they'll be SL, which will break baryon number, break lepton number, SB, which will break baryon number, and X, which I'll show you what that does in a moment. All singlets under the standard model gauge group. Okay, so precision electroweak physics.
How are we going to get mass in this fourth generation?
By coupling to the Higgs doublet. Since there's basically a standard generation with standard model quantum numbers, they can get mass the same way the ordinary quarks do, through coupling to the Higgs.
Except that breaks.
No, they're not mixing with the ordinary ones.
It's like
Q bar right, U left. There's no baryon number. It couples to the Higgs in the usual way. The Higgs gets a VAV, and then they get mass. Not mass mixing. There'll be no mass mixing, but they'll get mass. And so it means they cannot be too heavy, and the limits are pretty good. So Well, I'll come to the limits in a moment. I don't really understand them for a reason you'll see in a moment. A few moments. I don't know precisely what they are, but I'm sure they're good enough that there's not a huge mass range allowed. Okay, so let's say this new generation had the left and right quarks and leptons degenerate. No splittings between the doublets. So then what it would contribute to the S parameter is 0.22. So this is the degenerate limit. And S, let's even say they all have the same mass. And S of, but they're heavy. S, I'm sorry. And of course, in the degenerate limit, T would be equal to zero. We're not breaking the weak isospin. But what's the data say? Well, the data says that S is equal to 0.03 plus or minus 0.10. I might not have this exactly right. And T is something like 0.07 plus or minus 0.08. And so at one sigma, we're not going to make this work. It's just not going to work. Of course, this is the degenerate limit, and there's more you can do. You can have non-degenerate. And it ends up you can make things work when they're non-degenerate. Still not really at one sigma. You have to go, well, some people say there's some of the parameter space at one sigma, but if you go to something like 90% confidence level, there's a lot of phase space for which you can build models consistent with precision electroweak physics. Basically, what happens is that when they're non-degenerate, you can get S somewhat large, smaller than this. But in addition, the T parameter goes up. And if you look at the allowed ellipse of S and T, there's some constraint in the joint parameter space, not just limits like this. Then where you get big S, you tend to also have big T. And so it naturally fits in that ellipse, that 90% confidence level ellipse. If you're interested, just a few days ago, there was a paper posted on the web that talked about the fourth generation allowed precision electroweak parameter space. So I'd say that, you know, it's clearly not favored compared to the standard model by precision electroweak physics, no doubt about that. But it's by no means ruled out, excluded, or even close to excluded right now by precision electroweak physics. Oh, thanks. Yeah. The Higgs likes to be light for this. It gets worse if you make the Higgs heavy. Thank you. So that's a little bit of a minus. It does work. But, you know, it's not as nice as the standard model. The level, you know, if you talk about which fits better, some confidence level, the standard model fits better.
If it's not degenerate, you're adding a positive.
To T, you're adding something.
Doesn't that allow the Higgs mass to go
away? The Higgs mass could go up somewhat, but because we've added this stuff, it still favors a lower Higgs mass, is the claim. I haven't gone through the fits myself, but the recent paper I'm citing claims it still favors a lighter Higgs mass. Okay. So that's the particle content. And now we have to start to write out a Lagrangian to know if the physics works at a level that we really, you know, what do we get? Does it work? Are there flavor change neutral currents at tree level? What's going on? Everybody with me so far? Okay. Yeah, I'm taking no answer as a yes. You know, it's kind of one of those old professorial methods. Yeah, no answer is a yes. So I'll do it in two ways. First, the quark sector. So they can get mass. They can get mass, as we mentioned before, just by coupling to the standard model. Let me be a little bit schematic in how I write things down, so I'm not going to distinguish I sigma 2 H star in sigma 2 in SU2 space from H star, for example. But so this is more or less just like the standard model particles, except right and left are flipped. I can't even write it. It's so ingrained in my mind that this should be right, left-handed. So that's part of the same in the standard model. You have a coupling constant here. This time it's just a constant, not a matrix. So when the Higgs gets a VeV, the particles get mass. But there's nothing here that allows the fourth generation to decay. We don't want to have stable colored objects with a mass of around 100, 200, 300 JeV. So we have to clearly add something to allow them to decay. So to allow them to decay, I'm going to add a complex scalar. That does not get a VeV, no VeV, no vacuum expectation value. And it's going to have quantum numbers. It's a singlet under everything. And it's got minus 2/3 and zero. And then what does the decay look like? This is a contribution to the Lagrangian that allows them to decay. Well, there'll be some matrix here, and then there'll be the X. And I want to count baryon number here. So there'll be Q left bar. So that's going to be minus 1/3 because of the bar. Q right prime. That's 1. And so if I have this have baryon number minus 2/3, you can see that this is allowed by the baryon number symmetry. There's no coupling of the primes to the ordinary quarks by the baryon number charge. Right? Baryon number is now a gauge symmetry.
Can you also rotate any phases away in the new generation
powers? Yeah, I suppose that's true. I haven't thought about it, but yeah, you could just rotate these fields. Maybe no phase in those Yukawas. So now, you can see that if the primed fields are heavy enough, then they're going to decay in the following way. Let me go over, there's too many boards here. Mm-hmm. It's shocking that I go so slow. You know, I go slower every year as I get older. If I'm still coming back to perimeter in 10 years or so, you'll have to schedule me for a 2-hour talk. There'll be no 1-hour talk that's humanly possible. Okay, how do they decay? The U prime and the D prime can decay to this X particle, U and D. Let's see, is it the X? I guess it's the X bar. In order for this decay to be allowed, the X has to be lighter than the fourth generation quarks. Actually, this model that I've written down so far, I've just written down all the allowed renormalizable interactions given the particle content that I've put in. It has an accidental symmetry. It has a symmetry where the Q prime right, U left prime, D left prime, goes to e to the I alpha. And the X goes to e to the minus I alpha X. This symmetry is not spontaneously broken, and so the X will be stable. At least at not counting non-perturbative effects. I haven't thought about anomalies, but they'd be very small anyways. No, the proton's pretty stable in the standard model, even though there's an anomaly in the baryon number. But you can see that this symmetry, if the X is the lightest of the new particles with baryon number, will make the X stable.
What's the fate of it? Both
the real part is imaginary. They're both stable. Yeah. Yeah. Makes a big difference, actually, for the relic abundance. Yeah. So, and the X has no charge. It's got no quantum numbers under the standard model. It's just got baryon number. We don't want the dark matter to have charge, obviously, electromagnetic charge. And so it's a dark matter candidate. And if you assume that it's in, that everything's in thermal equilibrium above some temperature, you can go ahead and calculate its relic abundance. There's several ways you can get rid of it. You can get rid of it, for example, the X and X bar. This is get rid of it in the universe as the temperature drops below its mass. It could annihilate through ZB and produce ordinary quarks. How else can it annihilate? Well, we should think about the Higgs potential as well. There's a possible term like this in the Higgs potential. And for the moment, let me imagine the X is lighter than the Higgs. Then when the Higgs gets a VeV, you can have an interaction like this. And then the Higgs could annihilate to BB bar, for example. And you can could decay to BB bar. And so the X's can, it's a virtual Higgs, but the X's can annihilate through this. And this goes with a coupling lambda, and then there's an MB over V at this vertex, and this involves this mass and the gauge coupling. So even though this is not in our paper, I did get a chance before coming here to go ahead and check whether you can get an acceptable dark matter candidate, the correct relic abundance for a range of parameters. And yes, you can. For example, if ZB is about a TeV, and the coupling, gauge coupling has strength 1, then if you get an MX, now I'm assuming this one's small, if you have an MX of around 90 JeV, then you get the right relic abundance, so it would be the dark matter. Kind of a more interesting case, interesting might be the wrong word, a more perverted case is if lambda, is like 0.2, I might not be remembering exactly right, but if lambda is somewhat small, then you can get the right relic abundance for, and the Higgs is, let's say, 120 JeV for an X mass. I don't remember the precise value, but it's less than half the Higgs mass. And it ends up, so that means the Higgs could decay to X's through the same interaction. And if you, and so lambda is kind of small, but if you work that out, this is a significant branching ratio compared to the BB bar branching ratio, and so it dilutes the branching ratio of Higgs to the more observable modes like tau tau and gamma gamma as well by factors of 2 or 3, depending on the precise values of the parameters you use. Could even be more, perhaps.
If it fixes that light, it's hierarchy problem, which also you should have seen some sign of
Well, it just gets a mass through the Higgs potential, through a potential you just write down by hand, like the what you usually do, like the Higgs.
It doesn't have its own hierarchy problem?
It has its own hierarchy problem. Every scalar has a hierarchy problem,
yeah.
Not in reference to the Higgs, but in reference to the gut scale. So, this is building a model where I say, forget the hierarchy problem. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe we don't understand these fine-tuning issues. So I should have made that clear. There's no sense in which this addresses the hierarchy problem. And because there's more scalars, I'm not viewing that as less or better. I'm just pretending that problem arises because we don't understand something about how you should think about it.
How can you produce X in the collider?
Oh, that would be very hard. Yeah.
You have to go through a gauge boson.
But you wouldn't see it. It would be like missing energy, but you could make these Q primes and then they would decay, making the X's, but they'd be events with missing energy.
Oh, you just said a minute ago, you can produce on shell Higgs is like decay.
Yeah.
But
the rate for Higgs will be much less than the rate for the Q.
Because you can't make X too heavy. You want to make it below the quark, the new quark,
right?
Right.
Yeah,
unless you want to have an opportunity.
That's right. That's why. So there's lots of this range where it comes out too heavy. I just mentioned some parameters where it comes out lighter.
But you're just saying there's probably not many bounds on from colliders on X mass. Like you can have a 90 JeV.
No, but there's bounds on colliders on this quark mass, And there's bounds from unitarity. You can't make it, you can't have your yukawas too large. And so it has to be less than some scale, probably 400 or 500 JeV for unitarity reasons. This has to be greater than something from collider bounds like CDF. Why didn't I tell you those bounds? Well, there are bounds. You can look them up for fourth generations, but they're not the bounds on these particles because the fourth generations are always assumed to decay to the usual standard model generation with no missing energy, and this decays to the ordinary standard model, but then it's got a lot of missing energy. And I don't think that makes the bounds a lot worse, but I haven't gone through that yet.
It's not obviously ruled out.
I don't think it's ruled out.
There's lots of extension from collider principle. Both these kids are like squarks, but they're going to decay to missing energy.
Well, a squark, can't it decay? Well, but it's a different amount of missing energy, right? If I have a squark, it could decay. Well, I guess so. It's similar to a squark.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah. And you say this would be, well, but some, it's not always missing energy, right? In the
well, you always,
there's the always some.
You might get several quarks,
yeah,
or a quark and a lepton,
right,
but maybe it's just one, and then, but then I'm missing energy.
Right. So it's not, it's similar, but it's not the same analysis to forget the bound. Well, here it's basically a quark and everything is missing energy. That's what I'm saying. In supersymmetry, that's not necessarily the case.
No,
right.
It can be.
Anyway, you can make those yukawas very small. As long as it decays eventually, the heavy quarks.
I know, but that won't help you with the bounds. Once you make it, it's made just through color. Once you make it, it has to decay. So I have to make them really small. So,
right.
So that's going to be irrelevant for the bounds. They're going to come from some analysis of jets and missing energy. It's going to be some number, you know, 200 JeVs, my guess, something like that. They're produced four times more than a squark, for example. Because they're quarks. I think it's a factor of 4 actually if you compare a scalar to a.
But then you have left and right handed squarks.
Yeah, well, so somebody has to do this to get the right exact number. It's going to be some number, I'm guessing, around 200 or 300 JeV. But I don't know it. Geez, I ran out of time. What else should I say? Let me say one or two other things.
Do you make an effort to get rid of this hairy leptons as well?
Okay, so the leptons, you know, the right-handed, the new lepton has to be greater than like half the Z mass, otherwise we'd know it. And you can, let me go right to that part then. You can write down a lepton sector mass matrix. Couplings. So, for example, let's look at just the things that give neutrinos mass. Let's focus on that. Clearly, the electron part's just as before. But for the neutrinos, what we did is the following. So there was Y nu prime with and let me write it so everything's left-handed, just because that's sort of the convention in the neutrino literature. There might be a lot more ways to make this work. I haven't, you know, we just found one way where things. This is a case where we give SL the quantum numbers like this. Of course, it's a singlet under SU3, SU2. It's got no baryon number, no lepton number, but it's got lepton number 2. And then what you get is, for the ordinary neutrinos, you get the standard, Majorana mass term. The things that couple the new neutrino to the standard model ones is this term here. So imagine for the moment that this term was really small. don't know why. I don't think there's a conjugate here. I don't know what I'm... It's just... Yeah. So if you work in a limit where lambda b was very small, then for the ordinary neutrinos after s gets its vev, so this is the vev that's going to break lepton number, it would just be the usual seesaw. If the vev is at the weak scale, then you'd have couplings here that would be somewhat small. They'd be like 10 to the minus 6. They wouldn't come out to be 10 to the minus 14 because they occur squared in that formula. You might say, well, 10 to the minus 6, that's an awful small Yukawa, but the electron Yukawa is already 10 to the minus 5. So that's what we had in mind. And then the new left prime, it just couples up like a Dirac. The fourth generation just looks like a Dirac mass for the neutrino in the limit where this is small. And you just have to assume the Yukawa here is big enough so it satisfies the limits. So that's how we did the neutrinos. So let me just summarize, since I kind of ran out of time and you got the basic physics of the model. So one of the nice things about the model, if I compare it with the standard model, or that R is nice as the standard model. Of course, after I break the symmetry, then you could look at possible operators that are induced. You don't induce any baryon number or lepton number violation that would be in conflict with experiment. And even when you analyze higher dimension operators, they would not be in conflict with experiment. But so what are the nice features? The nice features are that there's no flavor-changing neutral currents at tree level, just given the representations that we write down. It kind of fits together, just like the standard model does. You can understand baryon and lepton number conservation from the charge assignments. It does not address the hierarchy problem. It's got more fields. Of course, it had to, because we're gauging B and L. So, you know, in our opinion, this is probably the nicest scenario where you can gauge B and L. It's got one plus, it's got a natural dark matter candidate. You can get the right relic density through the standard thermal annihilation. On the minus side, it's a worse fit to precision electroweak than the standard model is. There's other coupling constants that have to be somewhat small. For example, I didn't talk about the mixing between the different U1 gauge bosons. They have to be around 10 to the minus 3. Like F mu nu, U1 hypercharged as F mu nu baryon number, 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3. So that's the status of trying to gauge.
But there is one more plus in the STEM model, since you included the right-handed neutrinos. There, with no particular effort at all, you can have better genesis through left genesis, right?
Right, but I could add them in the standard model, too.
Not in this model, right? Because you don't have very heavy Majorana.
So you could ask, can I generate baryon number and lepton number? We haven't explored that. The symmetries are broken at the weak scale. Things decay, so, you know, I'm not sure, to be honest. But we have particles with baryon number and lepton number that decay. Maybe they weigh a TeV. We'll probably think more about that in the future, but I haven't really. I don't think it's ruled out that these models could give us. Well, there are in the neutrino sector. There might. I haven't gone.
Small. That's the point. The reason why leptogenesis works, one of the reasons is that you can write new color couplings that are sizable. If you just rescale everything, then you have to have.
Well, some of them can be sizable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know.
Maybe it doesn't have it. I'm not sure. And I have to think about it.
The thing that's a little bit worrisome is that you know.
Well, there's Yukawa's here. If there's an X particle too.
There's an anomaly in B plus L that is no longer there, right?
That's correct.
And that limits your playing field, right? So.
Okay. Well, I'm not gonna concede on that point because I haven't really looked at it in detail. It might be a pretty big minus if we had no way of generating it within the known fields, but I'm not.
You can explore it, right?
No. Within this, it's a perfectly concrete model. We will explore it, but we're limited by manpower. It's on our list. Might not work. Any other comments, questions?
Your things. mediated dark matter shroud are very close, eminent to this light shroud, very, being very close to the current bound. So.
What do you mean by, do you mean the X particle?
Yeah.
What bound are you talking about?
Just the scattering for the offshore Higgs is already kind of at the limit.
Yeah, that's right. But there's a range of parameter space where it also goes through the ZB. That could be the dominant. That could be, you know, this lambda could be somewhat smaller, and it would go through the Z.
And then
the
ZB also has a sizable coupling.
Yeah, but it weighs a TeV. That part won't be a problem.
And then the coupling is bigger.
Also, it couples with a third. The Baryon number of the ordinary quarks is a third. There's a one-third thing.
The nucleus has three times quarks, right?
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I'm absolutely sure if that mass is a TeV, I'm not going to run in conflict with the present bounds.
Yes, you will.
No.
Oh, yes, you will.
It's 100. It's 100 suppression.
No, you will. Of course you will. I mean, because...
it's a 10 to the 4th suppression.
If you just suppress the scattering just by TeV, that's something...
No. The way it works is that it's suppressed by...
Yeah.
Direct.
It's a TeV, no, that is, okay, it's an issue what you put in the couplings, but you said that you want the coupling to be sizable. Now the TeV will not save.
But that's a 10 to the 4th suppression, because it goes squared in the amplitude, 4th power in the ring.
I know, it's still something.
Well, my impression looking at the plots was that okay.
If you just have a neutrino, right? I mean, okay, but at 100 GeV or so, and the exchange by the Z would violate the bounds by at least 4 orders of magnitude.
I can look at it more.
Now you rescaled it, okay, by 4 orders of magnitude, it might be again
Okay. Well, my impression was that it was okay, but
The Higgs exchange is proportional to in the vertex to 10 to minus 3.
Right.
Because it's coupling to nucleons is smaller. It's already at the boundary. So now you create something in exchange by particle that is 100 times, 10 times greater than the Higgs. But the coupling itself is a coupling.
Yeah, but it's a vector. It's going through a vector.
Well, that helps with scattering.
Okay, well, I'll look at it more. It's something we're doing right now, to look at the range of parameter space where you get an acceptable dark matter. My impression was a TeV was okay, but we'll see.
Well, close. Okay, I don't know.
What scale are you saying would it have to be for it to be okay?
Probably around a TeV.
Perhaps even maybe, yeah. Because this is just a three-level exchange by, a TeV scale particle. You can just write down cross-section on the nucleon.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta compare with, if your particle's in the sweet spot, like 50 GeV or so, 100 GeV, you gotta be comparing 10 to minus 44 centimeters squared. So it's pretty darn small.
Provided that the dark matter going intersecting the Earth's orbit.
Well, that's the thing we're working on right now. So we'll see how that goes.
Right.
I mean, like. That's the thing we're working on right now. I just got the relic density. I looked at some plots. It looked like it was going to be okay at a TeV. But we'll do the actual calculation and see. Less than a month will be an answer for that.
Other questions? How about higher dimension operators? Violate the Baryon number.
There are higher dimension operators, I think dimension 6, but it's
not dimension 6.
Yeah.